We're gonna do a ceviche. How about that? We're gonna do a ceviche with the ink sauce. We're just gonna slide the fish against the grain, you know?
Chef Carlos Falcon is gently slicing wahoo fish into generous cubes. He's preparing the dish omakase style, Japanese for chef's choice. It's his favorite style of cooking. He grabs a bowl.
We got fresh lime juice. We don't need that much for the fish. We're gonna have some cuttlefish ink. So this was, it's gonna add a little bit of saltiness. And actually it's kind of refreshing, like a little bit kind of lemony. So I'm just gonna toss this. Now, some onions, some shaved onions.
With a pinch of salt and a dash of olive oil, the dish is complete.
3-4 ingredients. We don't want to overpower the fish.
It might be hard to imagine, but yes, a local chef right here in town is keeping his additional ingredients light to let the raw fish shine through. I'm Brian Ellison. Today on KCUR Central Standard, it's a food show, and we're talking about seafood in Kansas City. Later on, we'll learn about a local shrimp farm. Yep, you heard that right. We'll also have our food critics here. But first, KCUR's Andrea Tudhope takes us out to the local joint where Carlos Falcon prepares fresh seafood.
Out in KCK, just off I-70, across from a small laundromat in catty corner to an automotive plant, there's a little blue shack. Above the nondescript but distinctive building, a sign reads, Jarocho, Mariscos y Algo Más. Yes, on Kansas Avenue in the landlocked heart of the United States, you'll find the smells and tastes of the Gulf of Mexico, and Spain, and Haiti, and Martha's Vineyard for that matter. When Jarocho owner Carlos Falcon first moved to Kansas City 20 years ago, he was surprised to find very few seafood options.
And I always ask myself, can I do this? Can I bring seafood to the Midwest?
Carlos grew up in Veracruz, Mexico. His mother cared for him and his siblings on her own. And Carlos was the youngest of seven, which meant...
You have to catch your food in order to eat the day, you know? So we used to live like maybe 100, 150 feet from the ocean, you know?
He still remembers his first time in the kitchen at 7 years old cooking with his mother.
Oh, yes. She was doing tamales. Burned the crap out of me. But, I remember the flavors, you know? Dry chilies, guajillos, cooked masa, you know, just the smell of the fresh slaughtered chicken, you know, so it's just, it runs through my veins, you know, it's so beautiful.
These smells and techniques inspire the cuisine that he carried with him when he left Veracruz. After culinary school in New York, Carlos followed his siblings to Kansas City. He worked his way around the scene, from owning a restaurant in Lenexa to managing a nightclub on the plaza. After a hiatus from the industry, he followed his heart and opened Jarocho in 2014. Carlos's 77-year-old mother still lives in Veracruz, but she recently came to visit him at his restaurant.
So my mom got to see the expressions of people loving what I do, you know, like closing their eyes and just putting that bite in their mouth, you know, and her eyes got full of tears. It was a pretty touching moment for me.
With 36 dishes on the menu and a frequent rotation of seafood, depending on what's fresh, it's hard for Carlos to identify his specialty, although he estimates he sells 3,000 oysters each week. And ceviche is always in high demand.
Sometimes cooking it's a crime, you know, so eating it raw, that's the best way, and ceviche, that's the way, you know, to do it.
You can use any kind of fish in a ceviche, as long as it's fresh. Firm, bright eyes, red gills fresh. And at Jarocho, his pescados y mariscos are definitely fresh. He jumps at the opportunity when I ask to see his supply.
Yeah, definitely. So, oysters first?
He opens the refrigerator door, revealing something else he stocks in abundance.
By the way, we do have a crazy wine list, bubbles.
Which is a must.
Because I love rosé.
Then we head over to the walk-in cooler.
Here's our chambers, you know?
Double the oysters, one stack from Virginia and the other from Maine. Carlos gets oysters 4 days a week, but that's not even the half of it.
Orkin salmon from New Zealand, This is like sushi gray. We have some Chesapeake Bay wild striped bass.
Eyes intact.
Oh, yes. Everything.
He has contacts all over the world. He has a seafood guru and gets phone calls almost directly from fishermen reporting their day's bounty.
Cherry stone clams, they arrive twice a week. We get mussels, we get tilapias, we get red snappers from the Caribbean, we get freshwater langoustines from Kentucky, octopus from Spain.
Making a phone call and receiving a delivery are a far cry from running barefoot to the lapping shores of the Caribbean Sea.
That would be a dream come true, you know, but at the same time, this is home.
But he never feels too far away. Back in the kitchen, Carlos is showing me how to shuck oysters. He twists his knife and peels off the top shell.
It's like if you're like sitting by the pier, you know, and all that breeze start hitting your face, that's what it smells like.
He gestures, you know, for me to smell it. I lift the smooth-shelled pickle point oyster to my nose. Nothing. I look at him, then close my eyes. There it is. The ocean.
That was KCUR's Andrea Tudhope slurping and sampling the mariscos at Jarocho in Kansas City, Kansas, which will soon be opening a new location in South Kansas City, too. Carlos Falcón is one Kansas Cityan who does not see geography as a barrier to offering fresh seafood. Another is Mitch Schieber. He's facing the challenge a little differently, though. For the past year, he's been farming shrimp, and he's doing it in Oak Grove, Missouri, just east of Kansas City. He's left the little guys for a while to come into our studio. Mitch, good morning to you.
Good morning.
It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
So I am curious, what is the professional path that leads someone to a successful career in shrimp farming?
I guess you could say by chance.
Okay. How did it happen for you?
Yeah, well, a couple years. I do remodeling for a living. A couple years I've been looking into maybe pursuing a different career, just getting older and the physical aspect of remodeling. Mm-hmm. And by chance, I was helping my daughter with a science experiment. She was raising brine shrimp as part of that experiment. And I just got wondering, I wonder if I could raise real shrimp, you know, and I'm thinking like in a garbage can in the garage, just for a hobby, just for bragging rights. Hey, look what I'm doing.
Right.
Sort of thing. So I Googled it, you know, farming shrimp.
This is how all great ideas start these days. You Googled it.
You Googled it.
All right.
And so, of course, I start researching the industry. You know, in Southeast Asia, they have these huge, you know, square mile ponds where they're producing, we're talking tons mm-hmm. of shrimp a year.
Yeah.
And just kind of found it interesting and then stumbled on another website where in the past 5 or 6 years, it's actually people have been growing saltwater shrimp indoors in the United States. And that's kind of how got the bug in my head, did a little more research. And more I thought about it, the more I'm like, you know, I'm going to pursue this.
How widespread is this? How many places is this happening?
Missouri, I think there's only 3 people.
Okay.
And I'm pretty sure I'm the second one.
Okay.
I don't know about the first guy. He's still in business. He was down in Joplin area.
Okay.
And
so you get this idea, you Google it, you see that it can be done. That's not quite the same thing as actually being able to accomplish it. How did you get started? What did you do first?
Well, you have to, you know, apply for a loan to get the financing and
all
stuff.
Right.
Then I had to put up the building.
I'm trying to imagine what that conversation was like at the bank. did they say, you want to do what?
Yeah, somewhat. that's a good one.
You convinced them. They demonstrated there was a need for this.
It's kind of one of those, I knew the banker.
Mm.
And one thing that bankers do that, you know, they can't justify it on paper, but the integrity of the person they're giving the loan to.
So you'd built up some credibility here.
Yeah, well, I already had the credibility is kind of what the deal was.
And so you go and you did you have to build a test pool? Did you do kind of a practice run at this?
I jumped in with both feet.
I see what you did there. And so how'd that work? What kind of facility do you have?
I have a 50 by 60 building. I've got 9 tanks in it right now. And when I say a tank, it's a 14-foot swimming pool that's been modified to accommodate the shrimp and the system they need to live in. And every month, I have three tanks that are, you know, ready for to harvest shrimp. So it's kind of a three-month cycle with growing the shrimp from the time I put them in there.
So, and these are all in a big warehouse or what?
Yeah, it's a 50 by 60 pole barn.
A pole barn.
Yeah, it's well insulated because I have to retain heat. This is a, it's a tropical species of shrimp. They need to maintain that warmth in the water.
How warm does the water have to be?
I'm keeping around 80 degrees right now.
Okay. And then you said you have three, it's a three-month process, so you have three different batches of shrimp at any given time?
Correct. 3 to 4, depending on how quick I sell out of one and when I go get the new batch and stuff. But generally, I have three different sizes at different stages.
And where do you get the shrimp?
I get them from a farmer in Indiana, and he gets them from a Florida hatchery. And he gets them, they're about 10 days old. He acclimates them to the type of system that we're growing them in, and then I buy them when they're 2 months old from him. So I'm getting them, they're about 3/4 to an inch long. They're about a gram in weight, and they're about 2 months old.
So you're not really raising them from infancy. You're more guiding them through adolescence.
For the most part, yes.
And so how many shrimp are in one of these pools at any given time?
I'll stock it with 3,500.
3,500 shrimp. So mm-hmm. you've got 9 of these pools going. So at any given time, you've got about 30,000 shrimp.
Roughly, yes.
Wow. That feels like a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, it takes some time to keep the water balanced. I have to check the water daily because it's taking care of the water. You don't want, you know, ammonia and nitrites and stuff getting too high because that upsets them and then they pass away and you don't want that.
Have you had some bad incidents? Have you lost some shrimp?
Yeah, it's always, well, we get what we call the suicide jump. You know, they jump out of the tank at night. Shrimp jump.
Really?
A lot of people don't know that. Yeah, they do jump. And there's an extra foot on the height of the pool, and they can still clear that easily. So we lose some that way. But it's kind of the first year is very trying in this business. And I was told not to expect, you know, much more than a 50% survival rate at best.
Wow.
And one crop I did hit 50%, and it's been roughly around 35 to 40% lately. And that's to be expected. So yeah, the first year is tough, and I'm still in that first year. So after that, my survival rate will go up, and you know, it's the bacteria in the water is what keeps things balanced, and you get the bacteria established, and that's the whole process that I'm working to get, and then the survival rate shoots up.
These are good bacteria.
Good bacteria, yes.
So it's different than a fish tank you might have in your own home where you've got some sort of filtration system that's running all the time.
Correct. The bacteria is the filtration system. You know, the shrimp produce their waste. The bacteria consumes that waste.
Hmm. So you don't have to clean the pools yourself.
No, it's called a zero exchange system. So there's no water exchange, which is good. It's, you know, eco-friendly.
I have to admit, maybe this is fitting for someone who lives in Kansas City, but I don't really know how shrimp normally grow out in the wild. Do they swim long distances? Do they generally travel in schools? How would their life be different if it were not in a pool in Oak Grove, Missouri?
Yeah, I'm not too sure myself, to be honest about it.
But it doesn't really matter.
No.
Are there particular challenges about farm growing shrimp that's different than other seafood? I'm thinking of something like salmon, that's a huge industry. Farm growing fish. Is it different with shrimp? Is it harder?
I'm not super familiar with the salmon industry, to be honest, but I know that what I do know, they like have big tanks in the ocean or big nets in the ocean to keep them contained in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how to compare. Obviously, I have the you know, just a single tank.
Right. Is the shrimp that you're raising, you said you get them when they're, you know, about 2 months old. Is that the only way to do it, or could you take on yourself part of what this farmer in Indiana is doing?
Oh, no, phase two, I will be getting the, you know, little 10-day-old shrimp from the Florida hatchery. It takes more time to get that established it's kind of the business model. You know, you get in and you have a quick turnaround so you can get established in the business, and then you can expand to phase two with your own nursery. And, mm-hmm. you know, when the other tanks don't take as much time, now I can invest in the time to, you know, acclimate the nursery shrimp to the system. And does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. So what do you feed them? What makes them grow?
Well, shrimp food.
Shrimp food. Oh, thank you. That's very helpful. is that a product? You just buy a big bags of shrimp food?
Actually, yes, it is. A company, Ziegler, and I believe they're in Pennsylvania somewhere, they have five or six different types of shrimp food for different ages of shrimp, and that's where I get the food from.
And you're sort of out in farm country out there in Oak Grove. People around you are probably growing things that grow in the ground. What do you think of yourself as a farmer? What you're doing?
Yeah, this is considered farming. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not your traditional type of farming, but it is considered farming.
Is farming something you feel like you know something about?
I grew up on a farm, and
where'd you grow up?
North of Odessa. It's a small town called Wellington. Mm-hmm. Little outskirts, mm-hmm. and you know, the farm.
Was it just your family farm?
Yeah, it was. It's been in the family. Oh gosh, I don't know the year, but I would be the sixth generation.
Wow.
From that, so.
So what does your family grow, or what did they grow?
Oh, we had row crops and had cattle. When I was younger, we raised pigs and stuff. And
how come you got away from that?
Just the, you know, farming grows. It's really not, I would like to be row cropping. That'd be my dream job, but you know, just economically, it's not there.
Wasn't sustainable.
Right. Not for our circumstances.
Yeah. So do you feel like, this is sort of a step back to the life of farming for you?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
And someday you would like to do even more than this?
Probably not row crop again. No, it's a lot of work and here again, a big investment, but. The land prices have, you know, really shot up where, you know, row cropping in this area is, you know, not probably feasible.
Yeah. So let's talk about the finished product with these shrimp that you're growing. Does it really turn out the same as if someone were to catch these shrimp out in the Pacific somewhere?
The taste, yes, is from when I've heard from, you know, chefs that, you know, have had both. The taste is the same.
So if I see
fresh and clean
wild grown shrimp on the menu, that shouldn't necessarily, that isn't going to make them any better.
I would say probably mine are going to be taste better.
Really? How
just
come?
Because they're fresh. You don't know the wild grown, you know, caught from the ocean. You don't know how long those have been on ice. Mm-hmm. And mine, well, I give them to the chefs. The day I give them to my chefs, they were still alive that morning.
Wow. So, and who are these chefs who you're giving them to?
Oh, gosh. My wife deals with them. I don't know their last names.
What are the restaurants?
I can tell you the restaurants.
Yeah.
We got the Rieger, mm-hmm. Novel, mm-hmm. and then there's two Room 39 locations.
Yeah. And so you've got local customers already coming to you and not to fish that's or shrimp that are flown in.
Yep.
So here's the real question, I think. Do you actually like eating shrimp?
Oh, I do, yeah.
How do you like to have your shrimp prepared?
I think the best way I've had it so far is it's just us cooking. I haven't made it to the chef's restaurants yet.
Well, fair enough.
That's in the works down the road.
Sure.
See how they prepare them. But my favorite so far is just a shrimp boil with the potatoes and the corn and all that, and you throw the shrimp in, and that's
spicy, a little spicy.
It's not bad.
Okay.
It can be. It depends on what spices you like in it, but
that makes me hungry already. do you have a restaurant you like to go to eat shrimp in town?
No,
you're all about the growing,
not about the growing.
Eating.
Yep.
Well, that's fair. You mentioned selling these to restaurants. Can regular people buy your shrimp right from you?
They can.
How do they do that?
Well, you need to get on our website and set up a time with the wife. Takes care of the appointments. That's kind of when we started selling to restaurants. We decided, you know, we don't have the time to be open all the time.
Yeah.
Kids involved in sports and
right.
stuff.
You have a real life, yes.
Right.
But people can contact you, and they can
through our website, kcshrimp.com, and then she can set up a time with you, and you can come out and check out the facility and buy some shrimp if you'd like.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. That's Mitch Schieber. He owns and operates a shrimp farm out in Oak Grove, Missouri. Mitch, it was so nice to have you here today.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break, and when KCUR Central Standard returns, our food critics will be here. We'll see if any of Mitch's shrimp show up on the dishes on their lists of the best seafood in Kansas City. I'm Brian Ellison. That's just ahead. Stay with us. It's Friday, and it's a food show here on KCUR's Central Standard. Today, we're talking about seafood, from locally grown shrimp to oysters and lobsters and fish from the farthest seas. I'm Brian Ellison. Joining me to track down the best of those in Kansas City restaurants are our food critics, Mary Block of Around the Block KC. Hi, Mary.
Good morning, Brian.
Great to see you. And Jenny Vergara of Feast Magazine. Hi, Jenny.
Hi.
Good to have you back. And, of
Thanks.
Course, Charles Ferruza of The Independent, and I understand... You have another gig, Charles.
Yeah, I just started writing for, maybe it's up now, an online publication called, there's two of them, and the publisher is probably listening to me right now saying,
right. It's very important to know the name of your
The Shawnee Mission Post and the Blue Valley Post.
Yes.
And, you know, my first 16 years in Kansas City, I wrote for the Sun newspaper, so I'm not unfamiliar with the world of Johnson County restaurants.
And regional repress.
Yes.
So, well, we really wish you the best in that new gig.
And, thank you very much.
Plenty of places to find the good work of Charles Ferruza. We are going to have some of that good work here today as we talk about seafood. And, you know, we've done other shows not too long ago on locally grown foods, and you wouldn't think there'd be much overlap between a seafood show and locally grown foods, but here we had an Oak Grove shrimp farmer on. Is there a misconception that people have, Jenny, about being landlocked in Kansas City, that somehow we don't have access to really, truly fresh seafood?
Well, probably. I mean, you know, it's inherent with being landlocked. I think that we go, that our brains go there. But truthfully, locally, I mean, we have catfish, we have trout, and now thanks to Casey Shrimp, we have shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a few, if you want to get really technical about local, we have a few local fish that we can kind of point to. And some of those we'll obviously cover today. But in terms of the rest of it, you know, we have obviously fish wholesalers that bring in fish from the farthest seas and bring them to Kansas City, and they land on restaurant menus, you know, all the time. So somewhere between what we're able to get locally and what we're able to bring in, we do have, you know, a nice selection of seafood in Kansas City.
Well, you mentioned the wholesalers. I mean, how do we get fresh fish in Kansas City, Charles?
Oh, well, I'm going to leave that topic to Jenny, because she's really an expert. Although it's so much easier now to find fresh fish at grocery stores or mm-hmm. supermarkets than it was even 15 years ago.
Well, and the Broadway Butcher Shop, it's a misnomer, but he's also a fishmonger.
Yeah.
And he's got the best, freshest fish in the city, I think. And he gets it from all over, and it is fresh.
I think almost everybody on this panel would agree with me that the single biggest question we get asked about seafood, being food writers in this town, is where as a consumer do you get good fish? Where can you get good fish? And I do agree with Charles that the selection has gotten so much better. And I think there's more demand for it as people are looking for healthier, lighter options, maybe, or pescatarian, or just eating healthier in general. Fish is obviously part of that. So I think as more people demand it, I think more stores and places bring it in. So,
yeah, I think there was a go ahead, John.
What I was going to say is that we were kind of joking before the show. I grew up in the Midwest, and seafood for us, my family, when we would go out, it was catfish or frozen shrimp or nothing, because we didn't even have really trout in Indiana. If someone's listening and I'm wrong, forgive me. But it was really interesting for me when I did a story on the menu collection at Union Station, because they have the menus from the old Harvey House restaurants. And because of the refrigerated boxcars, they could actually, you know, bring fresh fish
that
in.
That was the freshest fish in town.
And they did have a lot of trout on the menu, but not the seafood selection that we have now. Nothing like that.
Yeah.
So
I mean, it occurs to me that there might have been a time, and maybe this is my own misconception, when kind of the bigger chain restaurants, as much as we might not like to praise them, the seafood would be an area where you might actually want to go to those places, because they have these national distribution networks that ensure that everything gets there. But sounds like any any good restaurant is going to have access to those networks at this point.
You know what would also fall into the category of seafood when I was growing up? Frog legs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so let's talk about the category of seafood. And Mary, I'm going to expose the internal workings of Central Standard. When we sent out the word that the topic this week was seafood, Mary sent back an email that at first we all said, what? She said, are we talking about fish or just seafood? And we all sort of scratched our heads and said, well, gosh, I thought fish was seafood. But in fact, we are the crazy ones, not you, Mary. Talk about the difference.
Well, seafood can encompass fish, shellfish, crustaceans, mollusks, all that. And I just wanted to be clear on what we were doing, because often there are a lot of people who eat fish and they don't eat seafood.
Shellfish.
Right. And my son is allergic to crustaceans. Mm-hmm. So he can eat regular fish. He can eat scallops, but he can't eat shrimp, lobster, or crab. Huh. So there are some
variations.
Yeah.
There's a reason to make the distinction.
Exactly.
And I got challenged on the promo for this show where I mentioned local seafood and then said catfish. Catfish do not, in fact, grow in the sea. So right. Are they, in fact, seafood? But we apologize for any confusion caused to our listeners over my
Well, trout wouldn't be seafood either.
Yeah, right. Know? Or any lake fish, right? So. Jenny?
It sounds like you're just splitting hairs.
That's right.
Exactly.
We're going to cover it all today,
we're going to cover it all.
We are very inclusive when it comes to seafood here on Central Standard. So here's something that caught our attention. Terminology does matter, and there have been some stories in the news recently about seafood fraud. New study came out from the ocean conservation group Oceana, sort of pooled other studies, and said that they estimate 20% of fish in restaurants and stores is actually mislabeled. That is, there's a 1 in 5 chance you're not getting the fish that you think you are when you buy fish or when you order fish. Jenny, is this a real problem?
Well, you know, I think it's something that most of the restaurateurs in Kansas City are certainly aware of. I mean, everybody who brings in fish, obviously, or deals with fish has to be aware of this issue. But the issue is it starts as soon as the fish comes out of the sea. If it's mislabeled the second it's caught and thrown on a boat and given to, you know, somebody for processing, then it's mislabeled all the way through. And a chef can be told that it's red snapper. And if it comes in fillet form, if the chef isn't breaking down the fish itself, how would they ever know that this white flaky fillet is something different than what's it's labeled as?
Jenny, so. Three words, Chilean sea bass.
Well, I mean,
any restaurants really sell that anymore?
You know, I think red snapper, there's several of them that are on the list, obviously, that but, you know, it is one of those things that where do we point the finger? You know, the restaurateur would say it's the wholesaler. The wholesaler would say it's where we get it from, or, you know, they would say it's the fisherman. So it goes all the way back to the beginning. And I think this is just a heads up for possible maybe government regulations or somebody else stepping in, obviously, to monitor.
That was one of the things that the study said, is that the further you get down the chain, the more likely it is to be inaccurate. And of course, the consumer is the one who is at the end of the chain.
Right.
Actually, not an incidental part of that is there's actually some risk. Some of the substituted fishes are actually high in mercury content, so there's actually health risks. And also, in a few cases, it sounded like endangered species were being substituted for the advertised fish.
And what about scallops? A lot of times the things you get on your dish as scallops aren't really scallops.
Well, I mean,
they're cut out of whitefish.
What There's are crab meat
They're
with
just
a K.
Fish that's cut, yeah. Yeah. At least the K tells you to be suspicious, right?
I think you'd be able to tell if you got something other than a scallop, if you really
yes.
know what a scallop is.
Right.
That'd be a hard one to
but
substitute.
But you know that if you're going to a buffet and they've got scallops on it, you're probably not getting real scallops because
right.
they're expensive.
Yeah.
Right. There'd be an expensive buffet for sure. Well, we are looking for your favorite seafood dishes in Kansas City at Kansas City restaurants. We want to hear from our listeners, and it does include fish. You can give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also tweet at us. We're at KCURCST. And tell us your favorite places for seafood in Kansas City. What do you like to eat there? I want to start with our food critics, with the restaurant where we started the show today, which is Jarocho. I made all three of your lists, actually. What do you guys like about this place? Jenny?
Yeah, I'll start. So Carlos Falcon is probably one of the first chefs to really take on seafood in a meaningful way, meaning it is all that he does. And being from Veracruz, Mexico, he obviously brings, growing up dealing with different kinds of fish. I've eaten things at Jarocho that I've never had before and enjoyed them, like abalone. So I think really what makes Carlos special is he's focusing exclusively on fish. He's preparing it in a very unique and exciting way, with very, very just simple accoutrements, letting the fish really sing the song, if you will. So I just think that he is someone that we can point to and say he's doing really interesting, creative things with seafood.
Yeah. I know the two of you agree. Are there particular dishes that that really stand out for you, Mary?
I love his ceviche, and he'll do it in various forms. I like the scallops. He does it with lime and onions and cucumber and cilantro. You can either have it on a fried tortilla to make a tostada. He'll put it in a cocktail glass. He also does a great drunken shrimp with the heads on that you peel that's really good too. But really, you can't go wrong with whatever you get. And the best thing is if you let him just do the menu for you and just say, chef's choice, you give me what you think is good tonight, and he'll do a multi-course meal for
that.
You.
I love doing that.
That is really his claim to fame. I mean, that was how he really hit kind of the Kansas City food scene in a big way, was by doing the omakase, come in and put yourself in the chef's hands menu, which starts at $65 per person and can go as high as you want, depending on, you know, what kind of courses you want. But you can kind of tell him your preferences, and he'll basically go back and give you whatever's fresh that he just brought in or what he's really proud of. And it's just an amazing, interesting, creative, delicious, and relaxing experience. Mm-hmm. I love not having to choose. I love just eat, knowing that the chef is sending out what's very freshest that day.
Well, and so. It's also fun because sometimes he'll bring out the fish or seafood before he's broken it down. Mm-hmm. And Bob Wasabi does that too with his geoduck. And you really know what you're eating because he's shown it to you 15 minutes before he served it to you.
Where I grew up, Mary, we called those gooey ducks in the Pacific Northwest. But Charles, what do you like at Jarocho?
Well, I've had some wonderful, wonderful meals there. I should say that it's really become a very see and be seen place, over the last year or so. The cool kids have been going there. And
the chefs.
Yeah, which makes it sort of hard to find a table sometimes, especially on the weekends. But, the place is not glamorous by any stretch of the imagination, and it's kind of small. But, once it gets discovered by the cool kids, then he'll be opening three more in the next couple of years.
Well, in fact, he is opening one more in South Kansas City, so right. Something to look forward to or to bemoan a little bit, it sounds like, for Charles. Okay, so Mary, you mentioned the tails on the shrimp. I'm going to just ask this is not in the script, but I don't like having to peel my own shrimp at a restaurant, especially if there's any kind of sauce on it. Is that a pet peeve of anyone else, or are you actually gaining something by the
tail? It is more cumbersome, but you are gaining something.
What are
in
you
that
gaining?
It's moister, more moist.
More moist.
More moist. And it retains its sweetness. Huh. That way.
That is true.
Okay. So it's worth doing. All right. Well, let's take a couple calls from listeners here, and then we'll get into some of our critics' other picks. 816-235-2888. Let's talk to Sam in Kansas City. Hello, Sam.
Good morning.
Good morning. What is your pick for local seafood?
Well, I told the person who answered the phone that I know of folks who crawdad in Kansas City as fresh sea, I guess you call it seafood, but the local ponds that are in our parks and things are full of crawdads. And there's a whole, I know several of my friends, let me put it that way, who are part of a community of crawdad. They take place in the urban setting. I can't think of anything more fresh than that.
Is that something that you cook at home, Sam?
I'm not a crawdad fan. I have friends who are. I have eaten crawdads at their house after they've purged them and boiled them and had a crawdad boil. I've been a part of that. But no, I'm not a crawdad fishing person.
All right.
I'm a crappie fishing person down in and I have a little place down on the Lake of the Ozarks I catch crappie at.
All right. Well,
which is very fresh.
I bet it is. Fresh caught, and of course, tastes better when you're the one who catches it, right?
I guess, yeah.
All right,
so
Sam.
I like some of my friends' fish, too.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling in. I appreciate it. I don't recall seeing crawdad on too many local menus.
You're not going to either.
Except in, I suppose, now. Probably not.
I mean, I used to catch them in Indiana. And
you want to talk labor intensive.
Yeah.
Wow.
A lot of peeling and picking apart there.
For not much
glory, not much reward.
All right. Well, if it's not going to be crawdads, what should people be looking for on local menus? Give us something a little less labor intensive. How about you, Mary?
You know, octopus is such a big thing right now.
Octopus.
I think it started back with Michael Smith when he first opened Extra Virgin, and he knows how to cook octopus, and it's not easy to do because it has to be braised and often grilled, and it can be very chewy and rubbery if it's not cooked well. And I always love what he does there. Carl Thorne Thompson at Story does a great job. The Americans is great. But my current favorite is at Boulevard Tavern. And he is doing one with potatoes bravas, so it has a romesco sauce with it, green olives, pickled celery.
That sounds delicious.
And it's excellent. And the other one I have to point out is Ryan Brazil at Novel. And I don't know what his current rendition is, but he used to do one with XO sauce and popcorn. It was probably my favorite dish in the city. But octopus is on so many menus.
Yeah,
now.
You are seeing more of it. When octopus is well prepared, as you see it, what should it be? Like, what's the right way?
You
to
shouldn't
make
be chewing it for a long time.
tender.
It should be really, really tender. Mm-hmm. And I like it grilled and charred, so it's got a lot of extra flavor.
I have one to add actually to the list, and it's at Voltaire. So Wes Gardner is there, and this is my favorite octopus dish, and I'm a giant octopus fan for sure. But he's.
Does that mean you're a fan of giant octopus?
Yes. Oh, okay. Just kind of in general, I would tell you, just the whole imagery of an octopus, just I like it. My favorite number is eight tentacles, all that.
Yeah,
but anyway.
Good. What's so good about the one at Voltaire?
It has a bit of a Spanish flair to it. So it's made with chorizo and a roasted poblano, caprese olives, purple potatoes, curly endive, and like a sherried mezcal kind of vinegar that's with it. And it's the whole tentacle. So it's not sliced up, it's not chopped up, it doesn't look like something else. It's the giant kind of octopus tentacle that you're just basically kind of slicing like a steak and eating, and that's at Voltaire in the West Bottoms.
I'm going to have to try that one.
I'm going to have to try that as well. Don't forget, if you miss any of our seafood recommendations this hour, you can catch all our critics' picks. Get it? You can catch them. And our caller suggestions, too, at our website. We'll have those up at kcur.org/centralstandard later today. Still got the rest of the hour, too. Call us at 816-235-2888. Stay with us. I'm Brian Ellison, Central Standard. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're talking seafood on KCUR Central Standard today. I'm Brian Ellison here with the food critics, Jenny Vergara, who you can find on Twitter at JVergara, Mary Block, who's at Around Block KC, and Charles Ferruza, who is swimming upstream against Twitter.
I'm opposed to it.
Yeah, all right.
On general principle.
We'll give you a chance to explain that every time. We want to hear from you at 816-235-2888 about your choices for seafood around town. And some people's best choice for seafood is a seafood sandwich, especially the crab roll. Mary, where do you like to go for a crab roll?
Typically, I prefer a lobster roll. But at Happy Gillis, Josh Eanes is doing a great crab roll. And he's doing pickled peppers. I'm guessing they're piquillo peppers or peppadew. And it's on a buttered brioche roll, and it's just excellent. And
but wouldn't
all
the peppers
crab
dominate the taste of that
you
sandwich?
You know what? They're just a few slices on the top,
okay,
so you maybe get a quarter of one with every other bite.
I end up kind of pushing mine into the sandwich just so it's kind of ripping through it.
Right.
You know, the thing about a lobster roll is that it has to have enough meat to make you feel like it's really A, worth the price, and B, worth the experience of eating it. And that's what this crab roll to me delivers. It's very satisfying. It's not like, oh, well, there's a piece of meat, there's a piece of meat. I mean, it's full. It's stuffed with this delicious crab filling and then these lovely pickled peppers on top. It's delicious.
The first time I went, I got a half a sandwich, that sandwich, and a salad, because you could do it that way if you prefer. And I finished it, and I thought, why did I only get a half? I had to go back pretty quickly thereafter and do it again.
Get the other half of your sandwich. Yeah. I feel the same way about crab cakes, that what ruins them is too much filler, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Mary says she'd really prefer a lobster roll. Anywhere you'd suggest she go for that, Charles?
I have had a delicious lobster roll. I hope it's still on the menu at Jack's on the Country Club Plaza. It's just an old-fashioned presentation of it. You know, the lobster is just a tiny bit of mayonnaise, very simple, buttered. I'm assuming it's a
buttered
brioche roll, but I don't know. But it was delicious, full of flavor, no peppers.
I think Jack's does a great job with seafood.
They really do.
I really do.
They've got great chefs.
I do too. I agree.
And is that only a Kansas City based restaurant?
It's not Kansas. It's
Colorado.
Colorado, and this is the first one outside of Colorado.
Okay, very good. So we've talked about shrimp and lobster rolls. But shrimp is something we've been talking about, the locally produced shrimp. How do you like to enjoy shrimp? Are there shrimp dishes that stand out for you, Mary?
If it's done properly, I love shrimp and grits. And by properly, I mean with a really good, rich, spicy gravy. I don't like it just in a butter sauce. And the Blue Stem Lounge, which is basically the same as the rendition at Rye because it's owned by Colby Geralds, they both are, is, I think, as good as anything you'd find anywhere, even in the South. And we were in Nashville a couple years ago, and I didn't find anything as good as Colby's shrimp and grits.
Yeah.
Dark red-eye gravy with some sausage. And
you have some shrimp suggestions, Jenny?
Oh, I do. And I'm just going to go ahead and tell my secret, which is I do have a Last Supper meal. You know, if I was at the end, what would
you
I...
mean, on death row?
Yeah, right, my last request.
Before she goes into the electric chair. I don't know about this, but go on.
So my Last Supper, so to speak, would definitely have to be fried shrimp and french fries.
Wow.
And it's just a childhood throwback. We didn't have access to a lot of fresh fish in Oklahoma when I was growing up there. So fried shrimp was everywhere. And so my choice for that would be Berbiglia's Roost, the new place that's opened up on Metcalf. It's just got a fantastic platter, both at lunch and dinner. And it's, I think it's 5 shrimp at lunch and 7 shrimp at dinner. The fries are cottage fries. They're hand cut. The coleslaw was fresh. You could tell it was handmade that morning. It was very, very good and very satisfying at a reasonable price. I just think that place is going to, as soon as people discover Roost, I think it's going to take off.
And the barbecue's good?
Barbecue looked great. I didn't get any, but I saw a giant platter of it kind of go to a man across the room from me, and it smelled incredible. The whole restaurant
I hope that place
great.
Takes off because that's what that neighborhood needs. I want to say that I've noticed in the past 6 or 7 years the return of a starter that had kind of vanished off menus, shrimp cocktail.
Mm. I agree. Mm. I'm seeing it more as well.
It had really sort of vanished. It was a real sort of... staple of menus for a long, long time. And now it's back and in all kinds of really interesting presentations, not just the usual, you know, cold shrimp with cocktail sauce. None of those presentations are coming to mind right now. But I miss shrimp cocktail. And, you know, when I was talking about the old menus from the Harvey House, they all had shrimp cocktail. It was a glamorous starter. It was a glamorous starter. And I'm glad to see it back.
I love Simply Prepared. I mean, just boiled, you know, hanging off the edge of the glass, hopefully filled with cocktail sauce. Pretty please for throwback,
martini glass.
Yes,
of
course. For throwback appeal. You know, love it.
Absolutely. We're talking about food, about seafood today with our food critics, and we want to hear from you. Let's talk to Jim in Kansas City, Kansas. Hello, Jim.
Hi.
Where do you go for seafood?
I've got a favorite place, which actually at 2 locations. One's at 31st in Maine, and the other is at 78th in the state in Kansas City, Kansas. It's called Lutfis, Lutfis, fried fish.
I think they might even have more locations than just those two.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
And a food truck, I think.
What do you like about it, Jim?
Oh, I just like their deep-fried catfish. And they also have a fish called whiting, which I don't know what it is, but I don't like it as well as catfish.
Hmm. Okay.
They have good sides, too.
And it's good. We are using the broad definition of seafood that does include catfish here at KCUR today. So thank you, Jim.
That's
I appreciate
favorite.
That suggestion.
I think, is it whiting? Okay. Whiting's a lake fish, too, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, they do a great, great job with fish at all of the Lutfis. I go to the one on 63rd Street.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's not really on my diet, fried fish. Right. But every once in a while, you just have to have it.
I don't. I'm not a fried fish fan. And, you know, a lot of people eat fish tacos, and they're often fried. That's one of the reasons I like the one at Cafe Sebastian, because it's not fried. Mm. And you get lots of guacamole.
You're such a snob, Mary.
Oh, well, I'd like to be able to taste the fish.
Well, there is that.
Yeah.
I got to tell you, though, the Lutfi's fried fish, Mary, is so good. The flavors are so good.
I do love French fries, but I draw the line at fried fish.
Fair enough.
I had a good one at the Casbah. The burger stand at the Casbah has mm-hmm. a catfish po' boy sandwich, and it is something to write home about. It's moist and crisp. It's got a crust to it, some sort of Creole coleslaw that's on it. I'm telling you, it's mouthwatering.
That sounds great.
Where is that? Where's the Casbah?
Yeah, it's the burger stand in Lawrence, actually.
Oh, okay. Very good.
Yeah.
Let's talk to Shane in Midtown. Shane, hello.
Hello?
Yeah, you have a seafood question for us?
Yes, I want to know if there's anywhere around here we can get whelks.
Whelks. Whelks are sea snails, is that right?
Yes.
All right.
I didn't know any place that I could find them.
Well,
I found them in Canada. They're like pickled in jars, but there was a big article in the Kansas City Star a while back about them. But
anyone recall seeing them on any menus around town?
No.
No.
I haven't.
Looks like you're going to have to keep looking for your whelks, Shane. Sorry about that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Appreciate you calling. Are there other obscure seafoods that stand out in your minds as something that you like to recommend?
There was a phase, a trend that mercifully has passed by, where you were seeing a lot of like sea anemone on menus.
Or conch.
Yeah.
There was a lot of conch fritters for a while.
Which were good, but I don't think people really caught on to them.
It's like rubber bands.
Yeah. Well, and sea urchin is a big thing,
I'm sure
too.
Prepared correctly, it's delicious, but...
Okay. Well, I'm not hearing any outcry for sea urchin in my social circles, but...
I love sea urchin, actually.
Really?
If it's done correctly. I've had some, not necessarily in Kansas City, I haven't seen it on the menus, although I suspect it's probably been folded into maybe some of Ryan Brazil's dishes at Novel, but...
I think you can find maybe whelks in the same restaurant that has... Crawdads.
I've never heard of whelks at all. So
Lawrence Welk.
We do. Yes, right. He's from the Midwest.
He's from around here.
Let's talk to, apparently to Crazy John in Lee's Summit. Hello, Crazy John.
Well, good morning. You mean you haven't had your fresh uni yet today?
No,
nobody here has. What's your the turn. Dish you'd recommend, John?
I feel pretty lucky. I haven't had seafood all around the world, but it comes to mind. You guys were talking about crawdads earlier, or mud bugs, or crawfish. There's a buffet called Joy Walk up on 119th and Metcalf, and they have an offering in the evening. You know, it starts about 4 or 5 o'clock, but they cook it great. And the most fun about crawfish is eating them. And I grew up in the South, and it's an old saying to suck the head and eat the tail, which is basically what you do with it. You know it's crustacean, so you split it in half with your two hands, thumb and index finger.
Yeah,
and it's awesome.
All right, so, I appreciate it, John.
You should.
Thanks for the suggestion, Charles.
I don't know if they still do it, but when that Chinese buffet first opened. They did have crawdads or crayfish on the buffet, and the sign above it said small lobsters.
Small lobster, very, very small lobsters. One more pick from you, Jenny?
Sure.
Real quick.
Yep. Let's do Meshuggah Bagel. Ah. So they, the bagel place on 39th Street obviously has delicious bagels, as everyone knows, but they have a pastrami salmon that is delicious. And then I love their whitefish salad on an everything bagel.
Wow. So we've got quite a variety of seafood offerings offered up today. I want to thank our food critics, Charles Ferruza, Mary Block, and Jenny Vergara. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
They had some they didn't get to, but you can get the whole list at kcur.org/centralstandard. We'll have that all up later this afternoon. You can find our past shows there, too. Twitter is a great way to keep in touch with the show. We're at KCURCST, and I'm at PTS Brian. Mondays at 10 a.m., KCUR continues bringing you Invisibilia. Central Standard will return on Tuesday morning. KCUR Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross, and Fridays by Jen Chen. Our team also includes Suzanne Hogan and Andrea Tudhope. Linda Scher is our announcer. We had help this week from Ron Yerman as well. Our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. Gina Kaufman's on leave. Finally today, we say goodbye to Zach Klammen. He's helped us out for the last few weeks of his internship here at KCUR. Been glad to get to know him. Thanks, Zach. We wish you all the best as you return to Oxford. We welcome our new intern, Raven Brooks. You'll be hearing the results of her good work soon. I'm Brian Ellison. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you next week.